Greetings, you marvellous beasts, and welcome to 2022 from myself and from Barry. Now, we all know that New Year's resolutions are amongst the world's worst things, so I'm not going to make one, but I am going to just cock a snook at a New Year's intention to try and make these introductions less rambling and more laser-focused than they have been last year. To that end, two things, then I'm out of here so you can enjoy the show. Firstly, hello to a new Patreon member. Oliver Sweeney has kindly stepped up to the plate as the first human of 2022 to donate a couple of quid a month just to keep the lights on here at Worst Foot Forward headquarters. It is always welcome, it's always delightful, and Oliver is going to get access to all of our free stuff on Patreon. By now, that's quite a cachet of stuff. There's clips from live shows, clips of me doing stand-up, extra content that didn't make the original edits of podcasts, excerpts from our book that is currently out on the desks of various agents in London and beyond. So if you want to follow Oliver and do that, you can go to patreon.com/worstfootforward and donate. You mostly will have heard this shtick enough times before to know that there are various levels at which you can do that. The only other thing, which is sad news, you might be aware of this little virus going around, making itself rather famous. We thought that it had already done the worst to us, but sadly, our planned live show in February at the Vault Festival is no more, because the Vault Festival, one of the biggest theatrical dates in the London calendar, has decided to act decisively where our own noble leaders have not, and pull the entire festival. Genuinely heartbreaking for so many people. Me and Barry, first and foremost amongst them, because of the show. Barry had a play on, I had a stand-up show on, loads of our mates did. And this show is going to be cracking, it really was. But we're not going to mourn it. We will be back in 2023, unless another letter of the Greek alphabet comes for us. And we are also going to be looking at various podcast festivals and comedy festivals around the British Isles that we can bring the show to this year in lieu of that. So good news for you. We ain't going to be banging on about it for the next 6 weeks to make sure that we fill it out. Sad news, we don't get to do another City Live show, but more soon. There you go. I've managed to get that in under 3 minutes. I am delighted with myself. So, I've been the support act. Now it's time for your headline. Enjoy this week's episode about the world's worst festival. Welcome, friends, to Worst Foot Forward, the podcast that each week celebrates the best of the worst. I'm Ben Vanderveld, and this week you find me damp, sunburnt, ridden with trench foot, pitted with midgy bites, topped up with Tesco value cider, and tripping on some honest-to-goodness brown acid as I pour through piles of discarded Pop-Tart wrappers in the back of my undersized tent, constantly muttering the mantra under my breath, it's going to be okay, it's going to be okay. This isn't a nightmare junkyard filled with skins of the dead. It's an Argos tent full of my own sticky belongings. It's going to be okay. The worst bit, of course, is that I'm doing all of this whilst outside I'm surrounded by over-muscled, chisel-jawed, fairy-tale hunks serenading themselves egotistically on the lute and lusting over buxom French maidens who live in a faraway castle. Why? Well, because that's the last time I buy festival tickets on the dark web. That's right, I've ended up at Gastonbury.
There it is.
There it is. And with me is the Woodstock to my Snoopy, the man to my Burning, and the coach to my Ella. It's Barry McStay.
Genuinely, all the way through the second half of that intro, I bet all the listeners were doing that thing where you get like, you know, you're watching police procedurals and the detective asks a really weird question during an interrogation scene, and behind the glass someone goes, where's he going with this? There it is. Gastonbury is the pun that we needed.
It is. I'm so sorry that I descended to your level.
You've been to Glastonbury and many festivals in your time, Ben, have you?
I've been to Glastonbury a couple of times. I have been to Tea in the Park, or as I like to call it, the Scottish International Drinking Festival. I've been to Festival Number 6, which is a great festival, which is takes place in Port Merion in West Wales, which is for non-British listeners, is a fascinating place. Some lunatic 19th century aristocrat with more money than sense built a small Italian Riviera town on the Welsh Peninsula,
yeah,
and it is where the cult 60s classic sci-fi show The Outsider, not The Outsider, The Prisoner. Was filmed.
Yeah, amazing.
So yeah, you been to any festivals?
Not really. I don't really like crowds or mud or loud noises. But I have been to a family festival. I was working as an actor at a family festival where it was, you know, there was like folk music and arts and crafts things and treasure trails and all that sort of thing happening. And myself and five others, everyone who came to this festival joined a clan, and each clan was led by a particular animal, and us six actors were all dressed as that animal, and we would occasionally leave our tents and put on our costumes and wander around. It would be like the gods had come down from Olympus to walk among our people, as I, dressed as a fox, would encourage my fox brethren to go and attack the owls. There was my friend Emma, who was playing the owl, had a very good line in sort of startled, jumping and running away. So I would just get these like hyped up children who were members of the fox clan to like go pinch her tail and just chase her around woodland.
I mean, that's completely wonderful. I'm just imagining you doing that at the more druggy of the festivals.
And yeah.
Like leading, being a Pied Piper, leading a conga line of hippie casualties to go and attack the great owl.
Yeah, no, the secret to this whole deal was that I was the animal at the top of this particular food chain. Let me introduce our guest. Our guest this week is an award-winning stand-up comedian and writer from North Yorkshire. He started up stand-up comedy when he was 19 years old in a vegetarian restaurant when he was still a bit green. Appropriately enough, he now runs a chain of vegan comedy clubs, Viva Las Vegans, all around the UK, where only non-flesh-based comedians are allowed to perform. He's the winner of the Eric Barker Award 2015, has supported the likes of Lee Kyle, and is also a radio DJ. And alongside all of that, he's matured into a fine performer and thrived during the pandemic. He performed a farewell to his fourth stand-up hour, Here Comes Your Man, on Zoom, performs regularly to a devoted audience on Twitch, and he's been hosting monthly online stand-up shows, Matt Hoss and Friends, joined by excellent fellow comedians. How convenient that so many of his friends are excellent comedians. Pertinent to today's episode, he is also the host of the Castival podcast, where guests pitch their dream music festival lineup. So please welcome to the Worst Foot Forward Pyramid Stage, we call it that because it is literally cursed, Matt Hoss.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on. What a lovely introduction. I really
you could have come out and said, hello, Worst Foot Forward.
How are we doing today? Give me a yeah.
Yeah. It's a delight to have you here, Matt. Just a little bit of internal podcast politics to settle that I can't believe that you've named our stage the Pyramid Stage, and just to let you know that yes, as the Jewish member of this podcast, I built every last brick of it. Please do continue with your entertaining badinage whilst I await another religious slur from my co-host.
Well, I would like to say, don't push your agenda. There are pyramids in other cultures and other places around the world. Don't be so singular.
Yeah. And you know what? It's little known that we also built the Mayan pyramids. We just don't like to talk about it very much. Oh, anyway, later, Barry's segment of the show will be coming from the potato famine stage.
I feel like Mummy and Daddy are fighting so early on.
It's fine. This is essentially, if we didn't have a guest, this is essentially what the podcast would be. Hi, Matt. Nice to have you on the show.
It's so good being here. I feel so relaxed.
Well, some of our listeners may be aware of you because we have had adverts for Castival on the show in the past, and they may have wandered your way. Tell people a little bit about Castival and the podcast and your guests and the sort of thing you could talk about.
Well, so Castival, it's the idea of it. It's where people, wonderful guests, like Ben, come on and pitch their dream music festival. I act as a kind of a interim kind of a virtual tour guide. We kind of look at the lineup, but more than just the lineup, we look at the kind of the other spectacles there, the other things they might want, like food or drink, but also like the heart of what it is. It's talking about passions, and I love people talking about their passions. And Castle is like kind of a very sneaky way to interview someone, because you learn about who, what the tastes are, but also what the vibe is, what kind of things they would like to have. And it gets quite sentimental at times, but also it's very funny and very silly quite a lot of the time too.
That's nice. Yeah, I mean, given we're about to talk about terrible music festivals, without slurring any of your guests, what is the festival that was pitched to you on Castival that you think would be the most likely to end up in a muddy, floody disaster?
Oh, like, there's quite a few of them which were quite nightmarish. And we, I think, ones that stand out in particular, Elf Lions and Bilal Zafar, they both had... Elf Lions had a theatre of horror, and basically it started off as just a women's only festival, which is actually a really cool idea. It's a very total safe space, and that, but then that evolved during the comedy podcast as a hunting down men and stuff like that. It's maybe where my line of demarcation is, perhaps. But,
I mean, surely as a vegan you must be against that. I'm just imagining Elf in like a flowing red dress atop a horse with beagles chasing after a naked man.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I pictured too.
Do you have a dream headliner, either that you have seen or wish you could see?
Well, yeah, it's a very good question. I think I would love to see David Bowie live. I sadly didn't get the chance to, but I think one of my dream headliners who I have seen live is probably Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band. I think seeing Bruce Springsteen do his stuff, even at like he's like 75 years old and he still like gives like a 10 out of 10 performance, and it's like quite a spiritual event as well. It's like 3 hours of like hits, but soul and love and community. It's really a really good vibe nonstop, and I kind of love. I think that. It's difficult getting a festival headliner because you're trying to, like, what you've come in Castival, we talk about, like, it's 3 different days, and you're trying to have a brief theme, but also you're trying to connect it all together to make sure people are interested all the way through. But I think Bruce Springsteen, even if you're brand new to him, you could enjoy it for 3 hours. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think I used to live in an apartment block in Dublin, which is very close to the RDS, which is occasionally a music venue, and they hosted Bruce Springsteen in 2008, I think. And the shape of the apartment block I lived in was sort of a U shape, with the open bit of the U pointing towards the RDS. That's so cool. Without being able to see it, it was just like it conducted all the sound into the little courtyard. So I could just open the balcony of our apartment, and it was like Bruce Springsteen was playing in our sitting room. It was amazing.
That's lovely stuff. That's been a pretty cool opportunity, because I that happens quite regularly at festivals as well. Like the idea of I know that wasn't necessarily a festival, but like I used to go to, I still do go to Download quite often, but my auntie lives at Castle Donington, in that village of where Donington Park, the hosts Download Festival in the East Midlands, and you can literally just open up a window and hear Iron Maiden playing, and it's brilliant. It's great.
I just imagine your auntie knocking on the wall saying, "Keep it down next door."
Yeah, exactly.
Keep it down, Bruce. The weird thing with Download, I did the comedy tent at Download, and I'm not a massive fan of metal, but I do like metalheads. They are generally all large tattooed pussycats. But I arrived at Download on the Sunday, and it is the closest I think I will ever be in my life to appearing on a medieval battlefield after the event has taken place. There were just bodies strewn around there. Most of them, I assume, breathing. A lot of them covered in liquid, some of which may have been produced by them, others which may have been produced by their foes. It was absolute carnage.
Yeah. You're really bigging up the festival experience there, Ben. Elf Lions had ridden through on the back of a dragon at that point.
Like the horsemen of apocalypse.
All of them elf lions.
I imagine Elf taking them out screaming, "Vengeance!" And all the metalheads going, "Ooh, when are they on?"
It does. Like, I think the last day of a festival is always so weird, though, because like it you're quite hungover, everyone's quite tired at that point, it's a weird vibe, and then you've like still got one more day to go as well, and so it is a different vibe on that day as well. So like I remember going to see Body Count. I'm not sure if you know Body Count, but it's a rap rock group, it's a metal rap group, and they just started playing Rain in Blood, and I was like, it was like in the afternoon, I was just sat there confused, being like, what's going on, what's happening here, why is this happening? And it's a very weird experience as a festival, because it's kind of like it's billed as like this big this wonderful fantasy, and it mostly is most of the time, but there is also that element, it is a bit of a marathon at times as well.
It sort of vaguely reminds me of the last day at school.
Yes. When
everyone knows it's all ending, and none of this has any consequences anymore, and somehow like some of the stuff has already been taken down or taken away or has been packed up, and yet you're all just going through the motions.
Yeah.
But also your teacher is is Beyonce. Matt, we've learned you're very good at curating other people's tastes. What would you say you are worst at in the world?
Oh, well, here's the deal, and this isn't meant to be a meta thing whatsoever, but genuinely, the worst thing in the world is I'm bad at making decisions. Like, and I struggled so long trying to think of like about 8 different things for this, because I was like, maybe I'm bad at cooking, maybe I'm bad at doing this and that. But really, what it is indecisiveness. Because like, I just feel like whatever happens, I'll make a decision, be like, maybe that's not the right one, then do the opposite, then go, no, I was right the first time, and do that about 8 times a day, and then I wonder why I have anxiety. Do you know what I mean? That's literally just a recipe for that, isn't it? Just kind of
Do you ever manage to see a band when you're at a festival?
Yeah.
Must just be wavering in no man's land.
I'm kind of like, I always wish I had a time turner in Harry Potter. I mean, like, if I can like get different versions of myself, like, you know what I mean? I might have like Horcruxes in different places, so I can see lots of different places.
I'm sorry, I'd prefer it if you referenced a less problematic form of time travel. We only accept DeLoreans this podcast, unless, of course, apologies to our Libyan listeners.
It's quite hard to get enough space on a festival ground to get a DeLorean up to 88 miles an hour without causing serious injury. The mud may also be an issue.
Yeah. It's like, can you give it a push, please?
But then again, thinking of the modifications Doc Brown makes to it, you will have plenty of fuel.
I read about some festivals from around the world to begin with, as you would imagine I would have. The International Hair Freezing Contest.
Wait, what?
The International... You heard me, Matt.
I did hear, but I was just astonished, really. Yeah. Like, I struggled to get people to come along to my gigs, but if they got an audience for that, I'm well pissed off. Like, what you refer hair freezing to mild comedy, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, no, this is in Whitehorse, Yukon, Canada, and their competition in 2019, they had 288 submissions, so there definitely is some sort of audience for it. Basically, it's exactly what it sounds like. Every February, at the Dakini Hot Pools, participants in the contest dunk their heads in the hot water of the pools, and then when they pull them out, the air around them can get as low as 30 degrees below Celsius. So it freezes when they pull them back out again. They can shape their locks in the frozen air. And the winners receive a small cash prize. They have 5 categories. They have best male, best female, best group. And I encourage people to visit their website to see what look like a family with their hair sort of entwined in one another. The Tim Hortons Most Creative and the Nong Shim Noodles People's Choice Award as well. Yes, this competition has got sponsors, as you can hear. And they very helpfully on the website, they have how to properly freeze your hair. They've got the steps. So step 1, dip your head in the hot springs, wet your hair completely. For best results, the outside temperature should be below 20 degrees, minus 20 degrees below. Don't worry, freezing your hair won't damage it. Step 2, allow the cold air to slowly freeze your hair. Keep your ears warm by periodically dipping them into the hot water. Be patient, all wet hair will eventually freeze. This includes eyebrows and even eyelashes. Step 3, once your hair has become pure white with lots of frost and ice buildup, ring the bell near the pool entrance and have our staff come out to take your photo.
Now, Okay, when we talked about audience earlier, I think it's like a kind of participation festival. So I kind yes. of I assumed like you like imagine like a family be like, oh, should we buy tickets to go and see the hair freezing thing, or should we go and see Fleetwood Mac? Like, I don't, it's quite an easy choice for me, to be honest. Like,
yeah, I genuinely though, Ben, your hair, you could be the Michelangelo's David of this contest. Your hair, when I see your hair, and the sculpture will emerge from it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I could end up looking like Ice Medusa, who again, Saturday 3 p.m. at Download.
Yeah.
I mean, the problem is, if I froze my hair, I just find it too tempting to snap bits off and turn it into hair lorries. hair lollies.
Hair lollies. There's also the Monkey Buffet Festival in Lop Puri in Thailand. Not eating monkeys, you are making a buffet for the monkeys, just to be very clear. Yeah, monkey population of about 2,000 to 3,000 north of Bangkok. And they're given this banquet of 4,000 kilos of fruit and vegetables and cake and candies every November. And then after the monkeys are fed, young people dress up as monkeys and dance around. And the festival was set up by a local businessman in 1989 who thought it would drive up tourism. And, well, it's still going 32 years later, so clearly he was onto something. People love monkeys, and monkeys love food. Equals profit.
It's gonna, not the first business plan I would approach with, but sure, if it works. Yeah, I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
Yes. The first year, it was like, well, we tried hair freezing, that didn't work. Let's try a monkey buffet.
Yeah, he's going on Shark Tank or Dragon's Den and going, listen, dragons, I give you monkeys. I want £100,000 for 1% of my monkey buffet business.
Guys, hear me out. Monkey freezing. But only long-haired monkeys. I want to get tiny little capuchins and then freeze their moustaches.
Yeah. Well, don't they have snow monkeys in hot springs in Japan, don't they?
Yes,
yeah. That's the perfect place. Yes, we could take the monkey festival. We could take the ice freezing, hair freezing festival international. Let's get me Yukon, Canada immediately.
Sorry, I didn't know this was best festival podcast.
Yes, I know. One more of these before I get on to some less inspiring festivals. I like the Boryeong Mud Festival in South Korea as well. This is July every year in the village of Boryeong, 200 kilometers south of Seoul. And it sounds, you know, a festival about mud and putting it on you and all this stuff. It sounds like it might be quite an old or ancient festival. It is not. It was first established in 1998. And it is, to make it even less sort of traditional, it was originally made as a marketing event for a mud cosmetics company. But the mud in the mud flats is quite rich in natural minerals and stuff, and they make beauty products from it. So they have this 2-week event which tourists and locals alike attend, and they have mud pools, mud slides, mud skiing, and I don't know what this is, but mud prison, it says.
Mud prison.
Mud prison strikes me as a place where one of Batman's foes would end up.
Hey, you going to Arkham? No, I'm going to mud prison.
Ah, Batman, you thought you could capture me in mud prison, but it is I, Sledge Man. I can bust out of anywhere.
To be fair, mud prison does sound quite easy to get out of, to be fair. Just got some hot water. There we go.
Yeah. Yes. None of the cells should have kettles in them. I mean, we're probably going to chat about Fire Festival at length at some point.
Yes.
The infamous festival from 2017, co-founded by Ja Rule and Billy McFarland, who the article I read about it described him as shady entrepreneur Billy McFarland.
That's the problem with Billy McFarland is that is what's on his business cards.
Yes. But I sort of tried to find a similar poorly organized disastrous festival. You do get the ones which are, you know, it rains. Glastonbury 2005, I think, was famously muddy.
Which,
and
I was at that.
That's the 4 to 6 feet worth of rain, apparently, in some places.
So I was at that, and I was very, very lucky that I cleverly camped on a hill. And so I got to look down at the devastation, because as I remember it, it was 2 days of unbroken sunshine followed by 2 days of downpour. Oh. And I remember seeing one of the most remarkable sights. I walked past all the tents that were submerged that looked like some sort of art installation. And I saw two guys in who brought a dinghy along, so they knew what they were doing, and they paddled up to their tent, and one got out of the dinghy, went, held his breath, went underwater, swam into his tent, came back out, and a hand emerged like the Lady of the Lake with a six pack of tinnies.
Wow. heroic.
Yeah.
But that's one of the, you know, act of God sort of thing. You can't really necessarily plan for the weather in that way.
I mean, the problem is, of course, is that Glastonbury has got a strong pagan following, so it was an act of a lot of different gods.
Yes, that's it. Trying to organise a festival by when the gods are a committee is a nightmare. But the Erie Canal Soda Pop Festival in Indiana in 1972, that had sort of vague fire festival vibes in more ways than one. This was touted as being bigger than Woodstock, and it had the likes of Black Sabbath and the Allman Brothers and the Eagles were on the lineup. But then the mayor of Evansville, Indiana, banned the festival at the last minute. And the organisers were like, shit, what do we do? We're going to find basically a bit of land that is outside the jurisdiction of Evansville's mayor, near enough the original place. So they found what is described in this article as a bend of lawless swampland known as Bull Island.
I thought that was just Florida.
Yeah. and they had originally planned for 50,000 people to attend the festival in its original site. 200,000 people poured into Kearney, Illinois. And obviously, it then begins to rain on top of it all. So you've got way too many people in a swampland, a last minute festival organization. There's mud, artists cancel, meaning the stage was just empty and silent for long periods. They couldn't do anything about that.
Do you know what they should have done? They should have just rebranded it quickly and gone, your headliner, ladies and gentlemen, John Cage.
The sanitation system flooded as well. And being a lawless area of swampland far from the original location, the food vendors ran out of food quite quickly as well.
Oh, mate.
So, and the attendees were obviously trapped there as well because transport was terrible. So cars were overturned, people were being mugged, and at the end of the weekend, they set the entire stage on fire.
Wow. I had no idea about that festival.
Yeah, that its 50th anniversary is coming up this year.
there is, in the reading I've done about this, there does seem to be quite a regular equation of hippies times festival minus logistics equals disaster.
Yeah, that does seem to be the equation. Yeah, that's the theorem.
I've never thought of it in such a way, but it's true, absolutely true, because it's not congruent, is it, to be like, hey, peace and love, but also admin.
Yeah. one more festival before I give you my world's worst one. Ted Fest, or the Friends of Ted Festival, is an annual convention held usually in Ireland. Do you want to guess what it celebrates?
Ted?
Does it celebrate Father Ted?
It is sitcom, the priest-based sitcom Father Ted.
Well, if you thought my J.K. Rowling was problematic, well...
Yes.
Hey, no. As we all know, Father Ted was written solely by Arthur Matthews.
Yes. Oh, of course, yeah. Yep.
People who are unfamiliar with Father Ted, was a sitcom on Channel 4 in the 90s, ostensibly about a parish house, a parochial house of Irish priests. One of the co-writers, Graham Lennon, is now a fervent... gender critic, shall we say.
I thought you were just going to say a fervent. I was like, that's good enough.
He's just a fervent. Yeah. He's a fervent Graham Lenehan.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a Pokemon.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I don't like what he's evolved into.
Yeah.
It's transphobia.
Yeah. but Ted Fest was, first happened in 2007. And people who were fans of the show thought, we'll set up a festival where people can come dressed as characters from the show, and we'll have events themed around episodes from the show as well. It was set on a fictional island, Craggy Island, off Ireland's west coast. So traditionally, Ted Fest is usually held on one of the western islands of Ireland. this year's event is going to be held on the 3rd to the 6th of March. And events at the festival have included best episode. They vote on the best episode each year, and then I think they have a screening of it. They have a Father Jack cocktail evening. Father Jack was the drunken priest on the show. A Father Dougal breakfast movie charades. a lovely girls contest. There's a sort of a spoof beauty contest on the show, the lovely girls contest, so they have that. Crazy golf. Hide a nun and seek. Ludo aerobics, I don't know what that is. Buckaroo speed dating. And a Ferrero Rocher quiz night. They've also held a song for Europe, a sort of a parody Eurovision. And a Toilet Duck Comedy Awards. The winner of this gets an appearance at the Cork Comedy Festival as well. There's a football match. On one of the episodes, there is a match, the All Priests Five-A-Side Over 75s Indoor Football Match. So they have a football match every year. And the first time they had it, they had the match between two islands, between Inishmore and Inishore, or two of the islands, the Aran Islands in Ireland. Mm-hmm. And the former Republic of Ireland footballers, Tony Cascarino and John Aldridge, were the opposing team captains. Right. And the referee, Pier Luigi Collina, famed, like, international World Cup referee, sailed to Inishmore to referee the one-off match.
Wow.
Yeah, and the winning island, Inishmore, won 2-0. It was declared the real Craggy Island for the next year, with Inishore being called Rugged Island, which is the sort of the fake rival island in the TV show. In 2010, they had a parallel Ted Fest in Australia, in Parks in New South Wales, over Easter. However, it says here on the Wikipedia page, it was not a success, the local police removing its liquor license due to noise levels.
Oh dear.
In what would have made Father Jack proud, I'm sure. And the 2011 festival, I like this, featured events including Ted's Got Talent, a parody of Britain's Got Talent, a pirate cruise, and a virtual confession box.
Wow. I actually really like... I love that it's popular, do you know what I mean? Because, like,
yeah.
I think if it was just totally a commercial... thing, but like I think it's a lot of fans just coming together having a nice time, and like,
yeah,
and isn't that something to be like really that's a great thing, right?
It is lovely. It is actually one of the, you know, I have a people make fun of people for being fans of things,
yeah.
Or for like being like really into a particular show or film or thing, and actually that's where they find their tribe and they have a lovely time doing it, they're not upsetting anybody, then more power to them. But I will draw the line at Juggalos, just to be clear.
We'll talk about those later on.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. But my World's Worst Festival, I've gone to, and I don't know if you'll remember this, Ben, but I talked about this, I think, in the World's Worst News of the Week, like several years ago. And I'm going to take you to Ulverston in Cumbria to their Dickensian Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And Ulverston is a lovely, picturesque village.
It is home of, I believe, Stan Laurel of Laurel and Hardy.
Yeah, possibly, yes, absolutely. I think you're right.
You're
right. Yeah. It's got lots of lovely specialist shops and cobbled streets and lots of pubs and cafes, and their Dickensian Festival every year, they get people to dress up as Dickensian, their favourite Dickensian character, and they have a parade through the town, and there's free entertainment and events, there's balloon modelling and horse-drawn carriages and music and dancing, all for free, with a fairground and helter-skelter and music and folk music and brass bands and all of that. Lovely. 2015, Ulverston Dickensian Festival joined social media and encouraged people to use the hashtag DickFest to tag their attendance at the festival.
Oh no.
Ulverston Dickensian, at DickensianFest, tweeted, hashtag DickFest is the tag to use this weekend if you want to tag any photos for sharing with us. Twitter user at VertTheBat, I am one of the many disappointed gays who showed up at DickFest. Twitter user Lee Proctor, packed streets in Ulverston, everyone loving a bit of DickFest, it seems. I mean, they have to have known, you can be pretty sure. The Barrow Police, it's a busy weekend in Ulverston, enjoy yourselves at DickFest. Visit Ulverston. Ulverston DickFest is a great community event, whatever the weather. And hashtag DickFest, possibly not the most child-friendly choice of hashtag, but certainly attention-grabbing and memorable. And God bless them, the local paper The Mail on their website, it did go ahead in 2001, it did go ahead in 2021 with social distancing measures in place. The paper really got a couple of great headlines out of the lead-up to the event. Excitement builds ahead of DickFest in Ulverston. and hundreds turn out for a stormy dick fest in Ulverston.
They know exactly they know what they're, what doing, they're doing
so much. So I just like that it's, you know, it's going to confuse so many people. And I can assure people, because I have done the research for you, if you Google the words dick fest, it takes no more than 3 results to go the direction you think it would go. So well done, the organisers of the Ulverston Dickensian Festival.
I kind of went the literal interpretations here, because I think there's a couple that we kind of spring to mind. I think the most popular one at the moment, and certainly for the last couple of years, is Fyre Festival. It's kind of a terminology we use for messing things up. And if you don't know what it's about, it was a festival, as we talked about, shady entrepreneur. Billy
McFarland.
Billy,
yes.
McFarland. And yeah, basically it was set in Bahamas, but not all of the logistics were done, and basically scammed people out of a lot of money, and it was quite devastating as well. So I think I'm not going to dwell too much long on Fyre Festival, because I think people probably watch a documentary and they know a lot about it, and if not, there's tons of wonderful documentaries out there. I think there's Fyre Festival on Netflix, and which is kind of shows the scope and the kind of the dangers of why it was so bad. And also but the reason why I don't want to talk about Fyre Festival today, because I don't think it's the worst one, because it's bad, don't get me wrong. But I think the idea of it, the reason it's so bad, it was pitched and marketed as a luxury festival, and the expectation was so high, and it did not deliver to that effect. But at least
there's also the bit of us that, as the sort of people who don't have $12,000 to splurge on a festival on a private island, there's a lot of Schadenfreude enjoying the sight of very, very rich people posting photos of terrible sandwiches and complaining how it's like a gulag.
Yeah.
And yes, rich people having a terrible time is absolutely my jam.
It's a very poetic justice festival, do you know what I mean? It's like it felt very good to watch.
It was like the end of the first season of The Good Place.
Yeah,
absolutely. They suddenly go, ha, 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 you're actually in hell.
I mean, actually, the Poetic Justice Festival will be my version of the festival for Britain after the revolution comes.
I think that's what the Brexit Festival is called. So
yeah.
But my point with Fyre Festival is that though it was bad, expectation was high, and it kind of didn't deliver, it was ultimately, you still went to the Bahamas, and it was still ultimately quite safe. And the ones I want to talk about are two ones which aren't safe. They genuinely are kind of like pretty bad. But, well, the one I'm going to be mainly talking about today is Woodstock 99. Have you heard of it by any chance?
No.
Yeah.
So, Ben, you might be familiar with it, but Barry, if not, like, I'm going to read out some of the people who played there. We had Lit, we had Insane Clown Posse, we had Chemical Brothers, Megadeth, Metallica, Limp Bizkit, who was really big at the time, Offspring, Korn, DMX, Sheryl Crow.
Just off the bat there, with a couple of notable exceptions, Rage Against the Machine, Megadeth, that is a woeful lineup. I know that you did briefly before, Matt, touch upon going to see a band that performed both rap and metal at the same time, and because I like you, I'm gonna let that go.
Yeah.
Broadly speaking, even though that is objectively the worst form of music, but Limp Bizkit are, if a teenager's armpit could make a sound, then that sound would be Limp Bizkit.
Yeah, like, and here's the deal. Like, I think you're right, absolutely. Because 1999 was kind of that. Limp Bizkit was very popular at the time, and it was actually the start of that kind of new metal phase. Like, we saw a lot of bands of that ilk come through, and that kind of amalgamation of rap and metal come through. But also, like, it's predominantly a white genre as well. Like, they took away the kind of soul and the kind of charisma from original like hip hop and rap and R&B and taken it and put it with metal, which some of it's quite good. I love Rage Against the Machine, don't get me wrong, but yeah, I can't. I think Limp Bizkit's one of my least favorite bands around. But we'll talk about. But that, Ben, you've actually hit on a really important point there. It's that the lineup is really integral to why things went wrong as well. But I want to talk before that. Its predecessor, Woodstock 69. What's your impression of Woodstock 69?
Well, yeah, people's sort of outside view, it'll be peace and love and harmonious and, mm-hmm. you know, absolute, like some sort of hippie nirvana.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not the band, the yeah, actual place.
Yeah, yeah, they were 30 years afterwards, but yeah. It's that there's kind of a mythos around Woodstock 69, and it is about peace and love and music, but also, like, what people don't really know, and I only found out recently, but people died at that festival. There was riots, yeah. and military had to airlift food in and stuff like that. But there was a film done by, it's called Woodstock, and it was basically showing all the good parts of the festival. And people had an idea of what Woodstock was from that festival, but they didn't see any, as we talked about, hippie admin. We didn't see any of that kind of breakdown as well. But Michael Lang, who is one of the co-founders of Woodstock, thought, hey, We did Woodstock 94, which was a good success. There was a couple of bad things. Like, I think the worst of it got was mud flinging at a brand new band called Green Day, who just got a record deal at that time. And they had just sold out, so people were really annoyed at Green Day. So they just started throwing mud at them. And it was like, you guys can fuck off. And that's probably the worst it got. But broadly, it was a really wonderful festival.
How dare a band get a record deal?
Yeah, how dare they?
Fuck off.
This is honestly, I'm not sure if I'm talking too much, but I'm getting so excited talking about music. This is like it's like crack cocaine for me right now.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's good stuff.
He's had a hit and he just can't. He just needs a little bit more.
So 30 years to commemorate Woodstock 69, they do Woodstock 99. And but there's kind of some kind of groundwork based stuff which gets off the festival to the wrong start. At the time, it's that idea of kind of they thought, hey, let's relive this kind of nostalgic festival. Let's have peace and love. But it's more than that now. It's not quite as it was in 69. It's mass marketed. It's like you've got bands like Metallica and Red Hot Chili Peppers, and they don't really capture the spirit of the festival, and I think that's up to personal debate whatsoever, because Metallica played Glastonbury, which people said it wasn't the spirit of the festival, but I think they do. But like, but what it does is that a lot of people are disconnected to why they're there, because like you start off with a lot of white angry young men go into there who have no connection to Woodstock 69. They're like, we're here to see Metallica and Limp Bizkit, and that's literally the vibe. And that's an important. It's the Limp Bizkit fans, Ben. They've all come out just to watch them. Do you know what I mean? But also, this is a festival of peace, love, and music, and they decided to set their sight on a former airfield, which not really congruent with the vibe.
Wasn't it a military airfield as well?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
I'm glad it was former.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, our next act is Jefferson Airplane. No, literally, it's an airplane from Jefferson.
Move out of the way quickly. There's a DeLorean taking off as well. What's going on? It didn't say quite. It wasn't quite on the same place. But also, we talked about earlier oversizing festivals. I think they had originally sold 220,000 tickets and with 10,000 workers. But I think there were reports that weekend saying there was loads and loads of counterfeits. And the reason they were at the military airfield is so that people wouldn't break down the fences, so they had security up. But This didn't work out, and later on they do destroy all of the fencing, and there's estimates, and there were different reports on this, so do take it with a pinch of salt, but they said there was roughly 400,000 people attending that festival that weekend, which is 150,000 people more than there should have been there, and it was already at capacity already, so as you can imagine, things were going to run out quite quickly. And on top of that, there's excessive price gouging, so like how much do you reckon it would cost for a bottle of water that weekend?
Oh no, like $10?
Well, yeah. To be fair, it was $19.99, but it's $4, and it was exactly the same price for a beer. So
what?
Yeah, so $4 for either a bottle of water or for a beer, which means that you've already got people who... And by the way, we're going to talk about environmental factors in a second, but basically it was super, super hot that whole weekend. Like, that it was like 100 degrees Fahrenheit for that weekend, and people are really scorching hot, and there was no real access to... There were some water fountains, but not enough, and to the point where people had to break the pipes to get the water out and stuff like that.
Oh, my God.
I love that by making water the same price as beer... They got real sort of 17th century London vibes going on.
Yeah.
Like, why would I drink that impure water when I can just have a nice small ale?
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Like, it, like, and isn't like, but also, what we've worked in comedy, and like,
yeah.
if you are at a gig where, like, sorry, there's no water, but beer's the same price. You know it's a red flag for a gig, right? You were like, oh, this is not the stag do I want tonight. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's gonna be like, yeah, so, and for $15 you could buy a bag of ice, which is pretty bad.
How big was the bag of ice? Because that's essentially that's what four glasses of water frozen.
Well, to be fair, I don't know, but I think it's just one of the small packets, to be right. Fair. But for a very hot weekend, so yeah, it's yeah, so so basically, you start off on quite a dodgy framework, but as I say, it's very, very hot. There wasn't enough water for people. There's not enough stuff for them, so it's already off to a bad start. But like, when they destroyed the water pipes, it also created a plumbing issue, meaning that the porta potties were immediately full already. Day one, Friday, it's just started. They're broken already. And what happened, and sorry to get disgusting here for a second, but what happened is that sewage started coming up all around the festival. It was soaking everywhere. But you know, like in Woodstock 69, everyone's like, hey, everyone, let's dance in the mud. Let's have some fun. So people are like, let's go and have a mud party. And they started dipping into the mud, which they didn't know was human feces. So,
be fair, don't call it a disaster involving raw sewage leaking onto the festival site. Call it what it was, the Limp Bizkit immersive experience.
I'm getting the feeling you don't like them, Ben. Is that...
Not a fan. It's one of those things, when I've been reading about these festivals, I mean, there's some festivals I go to and I sort of bemoan the fact that they've become corporate behemoths that have lost a little bit of their soul. But when the previous soul was a badly organised health and safety nightmare, I'm quite happy to have a little bit of dead-eyed safety officers there. When I was a teenager and I was reading about music from the 60s and getting into it, I was like, oh, cool, hippies, man, I really dig their philosophy. And while I like a little bit of the talk that they talked and understand why they were rebelling against their useless parents who made at least one, if not two, world wars happen, God, I don't like hanging out with hippies. Oh, absolutely tedious. I saw a little clip of a Bob Dylan documentary recently, and I think it's Dylan in the early 70s, and all of his hangers-on at this place where he's playing some of the most incredible music, they're all hippies. And I understand why Dylan got sick of them. They're just the most irritating humans, and I hate to have to bring it back to what is mine and most of the world's cultural touchstone at the moment, the Beatles documentary.
Oh,
but
God,
the
I
one thing I will say about most of the people hanging out with the Beatles, apart from some of John and George's friends, is they were just good lads from the old days in the cavern in Liverpool. There's not a hippie in sight, and it's to the Beatles' immense credit that they sort of dipped a toe in that fetid bubble bath of peace and love, and then decided to create their own much more nourishing beetle bath of love.
Beetle bath is nice. My favourite love song.
Yeah.
Yeah. I who'd have thought Ben Vanderveld would lead the counterculture revolution?
Which was the original name of this podcast, if I'm not...
Yeah.
Genuinely, to add to your point, like, it's okay, like, I have... I've been to a few kind of, the lineups are not great festivals, but that's the worst it gets. You know what I mean? It's not that mm-hmm. bad. Maybe some downpours, you can't affect the weather, but like, that's the worst it gets because this was so catastrophic and it gets worse and worse and worse. Like, it's genuinely an unsafe place. And like, though there are, you know, I've seen some pretty shit bands in my time, but not like Bon Jovi can't be worse than Raw Sewage, right? Do you know what I mean? Like, maybe they are. Depends on what lineup they play. But talking about hippies as well, there are drum circles there, but they didn't have necessarily normal drums. They turned the trash cans upside down and used them as drums. So there was no trash cans at all. There was mess everywhere. On top of that, like, people were like people said the best places to sleep were pizza boxes, which already is a red flag, but they said pizza boxes were the best places to sleep because they were white. You could see that no one had pissed on them. That's how low the bar is. That's how low it is right there.
I would have said that pizza huts would be better places to sleep than pizza boxes.
After the festival finished, it took 4 weeks to clean up the whole festival.
Jesus Christ. That's nearly as long as it took to clean up after 9/11. Jesus.
Yeah. Like a... To be fair, 3.5 weeks was an exorcism.
Now, how much waste do you think they accrued?
Like, in tons?
In tons.
120 tons of waste.
Ben?
I'm going to say 250 tons of waste.
Well, Ben, you were closest, but you've got to add an extra 1,000. It was 1,261 tons of solid waste.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. That's so bad, right?
Above. Yeah. I mean, again, Limp Bizkit's Rider. I could go on. It is a never-ending well, the jokes about Limp Bizkit, because they are that awful.
Let's talk about Limp Bizkit, because what I'm trying to paint a picture for you is that it's kind of this is building momentum where people are getting quite angry, and also the demographic. We talk about it's young white males, and these are quite mm-hmm. angry young white males. Let's talk about some of the bad things they did. Imagine it's like Twitter, but in real life for a whole weekend. Right, yeah.
Say no more. Yeah. Say no more.
Right. I mean, to be fair, I was going to go, what if the Nuremberg rallies took place at a music festival?
It was like, and I don't mean to go too grim here, but there was genuine atrocities at this festival. I'm not going to go into it, but you can research it. It's genuinely awful stuff. Like, there's people shouting. There wasn't very many women on the bill. There's 3 female artists on the bill, and every single person that did it, and to many of the women in the crowd, is shouting, "Show us your tits," non-stop. That was all the way through the festival. Yeah. And DMX came on. He's doing a little crowd response. He has a song which is he uses the N-word, and the whole sea of white men shouting back at DMX that word repeatedly was definitely not okay. Even 1999 was not definitely okay. To kind of cut a long story short, there's this kind of brewing, building of hate. This anger is building up, and then Limp Bizkit come on, and
that's not going to make anything better.
This sort of feels like if this festival were a textbook about the causes leading to World War One. It's like you said. Yeah. And then Archduke Franz Ferdinand decided to go for an open-top car ride in Serbia.
Limp Bizkit is Archduke Ferdinand.
Yeah, exactly.
It's because Franz Ferdinand weren't formed at that point.
Lovely bit of business there.
Lovely bit of business.
That's good stuff. But genuinely, like, you have this powder keg, this like gunpowder building up and up and up, this whole festival, and then it's like this pressure cooker, and then you have Limp Bizkit, which has the spark that lets all this thing unleash. Because basically, they have the song Break Stuff, and they do break stuff, and people start crowd surfing with the plywood they've ripped off. They start pulling things apart. It's like it's literally a riot starts halfway through, and the management, like, Fred Durst, you got to get this, stop this, and he's like, yeah, okay, yeah, sure. And then he's on stage like, that looks fucking cool, do that some more. It's like, no, Fred, don't do that, don't do that, Fred.
Fred.
Stop playing music, Fred, but also stop that as well. Over the weekend, things went from bad to worse. People ripped apart ATM machines with their bare hands. The insane clown.
Hey, be fair, that is pretty impressive.
I mean, yeah, it's like hawk-like power as well. There was people toppled PA towers on Sunday night after Red Hot Chili Peppers, which I would do too if it was them. they set fire to sound systems. They raided like the lorries to get supplies and started throwing pretzels on fires. And the fires started. Because there was a candlelight vigil, because there was this non-profit was trying to do a vigil at 8 o'clock. Very peace and love, very lovely stuff. But they used those candles to set fire to everything, which... Yeah, it's pretty bad. And, like, around the whole site, there's a collage made of piece of love made by kids, and they had ripped the whole thing down and
fucking
set fire.
Fucking hell.
Yeah, it's really bad. It got so bad, the security were brought in on the cheap, and by this time on the Sunday, they had quit. They had just abandoned the post. They just left, and there was no one to contain it. It was literally riots and stuff like that, and it was just. And on top of that, to help the festival, state troopers had to come in and stop the riots. And true to a very white festival, they were very polite about it. They just said, "Hey, on your way," and stuff like that. So it's a lot of bad things happened. An EMT who worked there, who worked through Hurricane Katrina and tons of other major disasters, said Woodstock 99 was the greatest disaster I was ever part of. Everything was wrong with this festival. Everything went bad. There was racism there as well. There was misogyny nonstop. People genuinely feel uncomfortable. It was not peace and love. And after all the fees, all the fines, Woodstock 99 only made $200,000. So, and there's many other things which I've totally just gone past. But yeah, it's pretty... pretty not good. All the
Woodstock 99 is the but wait, there's more. That keeps on giving.
It's the Hold My Beer Festival because water's too expensive.
Yeah.
It's time for me to try and fail to come up with something as bad as Woodstock 99. So let's enjoy 10 minutes of me scrabbling around for a consolation goal.
Sorry, Ben.
No. So sometimes you know a show's going to be close, and sometimes you look at the options available and go, someone's going to pick it, and they're going to win.
Yeah.
So to begin with, let's stay in America. Let's go to Hudson, New York, and go to a festival that has been put on throughout much of the 2010s and even last year whilst the pandemic raged. But then again, America had a very laissez-faire attitude to pandemic containment. Anyway, let me talk to you about the 24-hour drone festival. Now, is this a celebration of tiny flying robots that are used for surveillance? No. Is this a celebration of atmospheric chill out music that is used by yogis and hippies to try and attain transcendence? Yes. Is that as dull as you could possibly imagine? Double yes. Did it take place in an old industrial factory with a concrete floor that makes it look like music's answer to purgatory? Thrice yes. So the music contained all manner of drone, from Tibetan Buddhist chanting to probably Enya. There were pillows strewn all over the venue, and attendees were encouraged to spend the entire festival, that's right, 24 hours lying down so they could experience the vibrations of the music across their whole body. Let me read to you the quotations from a couple of the founders. Firstly, Melissa Aufdemauer, she said, "This is sound as experience, sound as installation, sound without the tight ends of time, and in brackets I would add, melody. To honour sound in a space that enhances it and places it on a long-form time schedule that allows it to expand, explore, experiment, exchange. And I would also like to add, never has a music festival been crying out for a bit of Limp Bizkit."
Yeah.
And Bob Van Heuwe, who is also the co-founder, describes it as an event at which attendees will leave with a new sense of consciousness, free to be different people and lead new lives. And I imagine the different people that they will be is people who are no longer into ambient music. And the new lives that they will lead will be people who no longer want to attend 24-hour drone festivals.
Well, to be fair, like, I feel that that same parameter would be for the people at Woodstock 99. They definitely left different people with a different outlook. Some people left in jail cells. So yeah, it's a different vibe.
Yep, it's that's enriching. Very true. on a similar vibe, in 2012, London hosted, I guess you'd describe it as an anti-TED talk.
This a rival to TEDFest?
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
No.
Yeah.
This was the boring conference.
Please tell me it's about drills.
No, sadly not.
No, what?
But it was basically, there was a thing called the Interesting Conference, which again, I think was like a proto or TED or sibling of TED. And this was basically a conference of a collection of speakers who were there to be deliberately obtuse and boring. The buffet was as dull as you possibly imagine. One journalist I read talked to one of the organisers, Hamish Thompson, and he said, have you worn that particularly boring navy jumper to mark the occasion? And he said, oh, no, I was up at 6 a.m. cutting cucumbers, and this is what I threw on in the dark. The boring buffet also contained bowls of undressed iceberg lettuce, piles of white sliced bread, dry crackers, and label-free bottles filled with tap water. I cannot confirm what the cost of them was. There were 500 people who attended the boring festival, paying up to £20 a ticket. They could hear various lectures on topics such as the relative heights of celebrities, letterboxes, the features of a keyboard, the shipping forecast, how dare you, that's not boring, and even a lecture about unexpected items in the bagging area, a history of self-checkout machines. Now, to be fair, it's hard to know if that actually was a lecture or just a early 2010s jongler's comedian bringing out the big guns for the set. My favourite part of that lecture that I read is the person giving that lecture, James Ward, just talks about how he defrauded Waitrose by miscategorising portobello mushrooms as their cheaper cup cousins. A direct quote, a security guard was standing right next to me as I carried out my mushroom hustle. I've never felt so alive.
Wow.
That is... I mean, to be fair, we got an entire episode about the out of the world's worst vending machines on this podcast, so we're not ones to talk.
Yes, do not judge without casting the first portobello mushroom.
Yeah.
The motto of the festival was, "We will not rock you," which, to be fair, I have a bit of time for.
Yeah.
The other thing, this is a side note that I found out, that apparently there's a Scottish village called Dull, and it has twinned itself with boring Oregon and bland in Australia.
Amazing.
Oh yes, the very opposite of the boring festival. This is a festival in El Salvador. Now, El Salvador is quite famous for having, I believe, one of the highest murder rates on the planet. I think that actually this may well be connected to this festival, and actually what we think of as murders are just a lot of accidental death. So this is in a small Salvadoran town called Nejapa. And this is a festival that commemorates a landmark volcanic eruption in 1658, which, according to legend, was actually a battle between local patron saint San Geronimo, and the devil, and as a tribute to this divine clash between good and evil, the people of Nejapa turned their village into an unregulated battleground between two warring groups.
Wow.
Now, what actually happened was not a battle between San Geronimo and the devil. It was a volcanic eruption. So what the people of the village do is they paint their faces to look like skulls. They soak their clothes and gardening gloves, which they wear, in water. And then they take to the streets for the annual Bolas del Fuego, or Fireball Festival. That's right. They dip rags in kerosene and throw them at each other.
What?
Yeah.
I thought you were just going to say they have a lovely paintball
day. Oh, no. This is clearly a festival for people who look at the running of the bulls and go, too easy.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, like, I just, like, I did not see that coming from anywhere. That really threw me there. That was,
Yeah.
I think we should have that in British festivals. Imagine that at Reading. That'd be quite fun, wouldn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. It's like they've gone to the Tomatina and gone, oh, yeah, is there a non-vegetarian version of this?
Yeah. Tell you what, Elf Lyons would love it. So
yeah, absolutely, bloody-lutely she would.
Yeah, she would. Well, no, it's the Tom. If you could mix the Tomatina and the Fireball Festival, then you would get sun-dried tomatoes.
Yeah, exactly. Do they devote an entire town to this as well? So
well,
presumably,
yeah, a village.
Okay, fine. So presumably, people who aren't really into this festival are barricading themselves into their houses throughout.
You know how in at fringe times in Edinburgh, like a lot of locals hate it, and oh, I hate this festival. Be like, well, at least you don't have your house on fire, mate. So at least that's something, isn't it?
That's what the fine people of Edinburgh are really looking for when we turn. It's like a bit of sunny side up thinking.
Yeah.
Be glad it's just flyers and not Molotov cocktails we're shoving through your letterboxes.
Yeah, precisely. I've got one more to talk about before my suggestion. The 1893 World's Fair in Chicago. So World's Fairs and sort of a festivals of innovation and industrial progress have been going on since the very late 18th century. And in 1893, there was a competition between New York and Chicago as to where would host it, because it was going to be huge, not least because it was known as the Columbian Exposition, because it corresponded with Columbus's colonization and discovery of America. Sorry, not colonization. It fell on the anniversary of Columbus's discovery of America. Obviously, it was 1492, but I think, you know, it spills over into 1493. It drew 27 million visitors over 6 months. Indeed, on a single day, 716,881 people attended to commemorate the anniversary of 1871's Great Chicago Fire. So that's all, you know, very nice and noble. But
the
fair also brought something else to the city, an epidemic of smallpox. European immigrants who helped build the fair lived in pretty horrible conditions, you know, hat tip to Qatar 2022. And 30 workers died during the construction, but actually worse in the long term was that almost 6,000 of them brought with cases of smallpox that then ran rife throughout the city, killing 1,200 people. And gosh. I'm just going to put it out there. It does seem kind of appropriate that at the Chicago World's Fair, that very much tied its legacy to Christopher Columbus, that so many people were killed by an outbreak of a disease carried over from Europe.
Wow, yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well done, World's Fair.
That is
World,
not my...
World's not fair.
Yeah.
But my nomination, we stay in America, we go to 1986 to the city of Cleveland in Ohio for Balloon Fest.
And what year did you say this is?
1986.
Okay.
Why?
Is this... I think I know what this story is. I think we've talked about this about 4 years ago, and I am so happy it's coming back again.
Well, yeah, so this was an attempt to break the world record for the number of balloons launched into the sky in one go.
Yeah.
1.5 million
Whoa.
Balloons. So in order to make this happen, a construction company spent 6 months preparing for it. They built a rectangular structure the size of a city block and covered it with a piece of a woven mesh material that could hold the balloons in and then be pulled away very quickly. Inside the structure, there were 2,500 students and volunteers filling balloons with helium. And that was going to be it. The launch did look spectacular when the net was pulled away. The balloons slowly filled out into the city. I'm going to say, in a post-2011 world, would look like a strange balloon art tribute to the dust going through New York after the second tower failed. Or also looks a little bit like the Joker is planning something particularly sinister in downtown Gotham.
Yeah. Or it's a sequel to Up. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, precisely. However, that's as good as it got. It began to rain. The balloons then plummeted and things got pretty bad. At the nearby Burke Lakefront Airport, they had to shut it down for 30 minutes because it just got swamped with balloons. In a pasture nearby, the falling balloons spooked some prize-winning Arabian horses.
It sounds like you're making this up. It sounds
The horses suffered permanent injuries, and the owners sued the city for $100,000. Police reported numerous car accidents caused by the most colourful blizzard in history. And a real awful tragedy was that two fishermen had gone missing in an unconnected incident. But because of all of these balloons being released, the Coast Guards couldn't find them because thousands of balloons descended onto the lake and made the search impossible. And sadly, the fishermen's bodies were found later. And this is sort of a tragicomic thing. The reason wasn't just that the balloons sort of do whatever the balloon version of a whiteout is, but every balloon looked like a possible head as it landed on the lake. And in the end, the wife sued the organisers of the Balloon Fest and won $3.2 million in an out-of-court settlement. Most galling of all for the organisers of Balloon Fest, adjudicators from the Guinness World Records were absent, and so the event never got its place in the record books anyway as the largest balloon deployment.
Wow.
And because...
That seems like a crucial organisational snafu, doesn't it?
Yeah.
How can you organise millions of balloons but not one Guinness person? You know what I mean?
Yeah! Right? Precisely. And while it was acknowledged by Guinness later on as the largest ever mass balloon release, they very quickly, because of what happened, decided they would no longer measure events which were considered environmentally unsound. So not only did they not end up in the Guinness Book of World Records, but they prevented anyone doing anything similar from doing so in the future.
Oh, that's
and
good.
For that reason, Balloon Fest 86 is my nomination for the world's worst festival. Our nominations for the world's worst festival are Barry's poorly named Ulverston celebration of Charles Dickens, Dickfest. Well, I don't know what year it was, but we'll just...
It's
just...
every year they've lent into it, Ben.
Oh, wow.
So to speak.
Annual Dickfest.
Yeah.
Please insert your joke here.
About anniversaries here.
Yeah, yeah. Woodstock 1999, funnily enough, a synonym for Dickfest.
Yeah.
Or Balloon Fest 86, focusing solely on the ball bag. I'm just going to let Barry have a moment. Are you composed?
Fine.
So, I'm not going to pick Dickfest because...
Pickfest.
It's delightful. But listen, I think the people there had a nice time, and people on Twitter had a nice time promoting
it. It is a lovely thing.
Balloon Fest 86 is quite funny, quite bad, but frankly, this is an open and shut case. If Woodstock 99 went ahead without a hitch, I would still say it was the worst of all time because it had Limp Bizkit and Korn at it. And any festival that's willing to put those on deserves to be considered for the worst festival of all time. But considering all of the disorganisation and all of the public health risk and the fact that Limp Bizkit weren't just there but were the inciting incident to it all kicking off, that makes it like the platonic ideal of the worst festival ever. So congratulations, Matt, for bringing that turd of a festival along to our show. Before we go... What were you going to say?
I think we should do amalgamation of all of our festivals, you know what I mean? Like, we should bring... we should be a, like, get a balloon things to go off, like millions of balloons to go off, I'll Slimp Biscuit a plane, and you know, it's double dick fest. It'd be great. So
yeah. We just have Limp Biscuit dressed as Dickensian characters tied to 1.5 million hot air balloons.
And you know what we're gonna call it? Limp Dick Fest.
Yeah.
Before we go, it's time for the world's best news of the week, which we shall continue doing through all of the variants of coronavirus. And for this, we go to Palo Alto College in Texas. In 2016, Salazar, a 23-year-old student, went to university alongside her then 83-year-old grandfather, Neira. Salazar majored in communications, whereas Neira, who had a passion for urban and economic development in the 1960s and did a lot of advocacy through civic engagement but never went to university, he majored in economics. Now Neira is terminally ill, and yet he has graduated alongside his granddaughter Neira, and they graduated at the same time and at the same university. And there's an adorable photograph of them both in their caps, in their gowns, receiving their college degrees at the same time.
Oh,
imagine the freshers' week. We're like, Grandad, what are you doing here?
this traffic light ball.
Yeah, Grandad, take that green jumper off. What would Grandma think? Before we go, Matt, where can our listeners find you, and what will they find you doing when they get there?
Well, you can follow me at Matt Hoss Comedy. I'm on Twitter, YouTube, and I do loads on Twitch. So if you'd like to see me do three performances a week, doing gaming and chatting, and it's a nice, good vibe on there, on YouTube as well. So go and follow me on those places, but also do check out Castival if you'd like talking about festivals with great guests and also a lot of charm and, yeah, some really nice moments as well.
Smashing stuff. Well, we're all off to eBay to see if we can source a giant helium balloon of Fred Durst. Until next time, goodbye.
Fred Durst.
Bye.